Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. September 11, 2014 marks the 13th anniversary of the tragic events of September 11, 2001. 9/11 was a pivotal event that altered all of our lives, brought us endless wars, torture, erosion of our civil liberties through the Patriot Act, militarized police forces, an executive power grab, endless debt, NSA spying on, well, just about everyone, and much more. We know that we were lied to about the Iraq War, torture, the anthrax attacks, and the NSA spying on all of us. So why would anybody believe that they've been telling us the truth about 9/11? And I'm sure if you've been paying attention to the alternative news sites, you know that the list of untruths is much longer than this. So today, I'd like to review some of the basics of 9/11 and talk about where we're currently at. I'll be providing some sources so that you can check them out for yourselves. No discussion of 9/11 would be complete without mentioning the Project for a New American Century, or also known as the PNAC. The Project for a New American Century was unleashed in June of 1997 and was founded by neoconservative William Kristol. The PNAC members were recommending in 1998 that the U.S. topple Saddam Hussein in Iraq, citing the threat of weapons of mass destruction. The PNAC also recommended increased U.S. military spending to pull off U.S. full-spectrum dominance of the world, stating that the American people would not support this military spending absent, quote, a new Pearl Harbor. 9/11 was that new Pearl Harbor. On September 20th, 2001, just 9 days after 9/11, the PNAC sent a letter to President Bush recommending the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, even if no direct link to the 9/11 attacks could be found. They also were pushing for, quote, supremacy in global politics and for regime changes in Iraq, Iran, and Syria. Several signatories of the PNAC letters and reports and position papers later joined the Bush administration. Some examples of this are Vice President Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, John Bolton, Richard Armitage, and Elliot Abrams. Two of these PNAC members, Paul Wolfowitz and Donald Rumsfeld, are part of a current lawsuit being brought against members of the Bush administration for the illegal war in Iraq. The others are George W. Bush, Richard Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, and Colin Powell. In the case, which is Saleh versus Bush, the plaintiff, Sundas Shaker Saleh, alleges that the Iraq War was a premeditated war against the Iraqi people, the planning of which started in 1998. The war was not conducted in self-defense, did not have the appropriate authorization by the United Nations, and under international law, constituted a crime of aggression. A crime first set down in the Nuremberg trials after World War II. And the next date set for this trial is November 13th, 2014 in the Northern District of California. And if you want more information on this lawsuit, you can go to the website witnessiraq.com. And if you'd like more information about the Project for a New American Century, you can go to the website globalresearch.ca and do a search there for it. And if you want to see the document created by the PNAC called Rebuilding Americans' Defenses, where what we just talked about is outlined, you can go to the website, The Information Clearinghouse, and search for Rebuilding America's Defenses. It's about an 80-page document. It's well documented that we were lied to about the reasons to go to war with Iraq and that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. So the Bush folks are claiming that the planning of the war occurred within the scope of their employment, and therefore they have immunity. So rather than actually deal with the evidence and the facts, they're trying to claim that whatever they did, they have immunity because they were employed by the federal government. And I don't think they're getting anywhere with that defense. But we'll see. As I said, the next phase of the trial is November 13th. So on 9/11, 19 Middle Eastern men with box cutters supposedly get through airport security, hijack four planes, and not one is intercepted, as is standard operating procedure, and three of them hit their targets. The fourth crashes in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, supposedly due to a passenger revolt that was reported via a telephone call from one of the passengers, Todd Beamer, whose phone was used to make multiple short calls after the crash of the flight and received a 20-minute call after the crash. This is according to 9/11 researcher Elias Davidson in his book, Hijacking America's Mind on 9/11, Counterfeiting Evidence. The World Trade Center buildings hit by the planes collapse in roughly 11 seconds into their own footprint. We're told this was due to the fire from the jet fuel. But there are now 2,250 architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth who've studied the scientific evidence and state unequivocally that this cannot possibly be true, that it defies the laws of physics. They've compiled volumes of scientific evidence, including the presence of the highly explosive material nanothermite in the dust at ground zero. There are also well over 100 eyewitness reports of explosions going off in the buildings, some in the basement levels before the plane hits the building. Willie Rodriguez, a janitor in the World Trade Center towers, testified before the 9/11 Commission about these explosions, but his testimony was not included in the 9/11 Commission report. Patty Casaza, one of the so-called Jersey girls who lost her husband in the towers, revealed at the conference the Connecticut 9/11 Truth Group put on in 2007 that she was meeting with whistleblowers on the Jersey Turnpike who wanted to testify before the 9/11 Commission, but would only do so if subpoenaed, and the 9/11 Commission would not subpoena them. World Trade Center Building 7, also known as the Smoking Gun, collapsed at approximately 5:20 in the afternoon of 9/11. It wasn't hit by a plane and had only small office fires in it. The building housed the CIA, FBI, and other government agencies, including New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani's Office of Emergency Management. Barry Jennings, who worked for the Housing Department, went to the Emergency Management Center on the morning of 9/11, along with Michael Hess. Barry Jennings was interviewed by the makers of the film Loose Change, and he states that he was walking over dead bodies in World Trade Center Building 7, and that explosions had gone off in the building. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, wrote that no lives were lost in World Trade Center Building 7. But Jennings is quoted as saying, "The firefighters that took us down kept saying, 'Don't look down.' I asked why, and he said, 'Do not look down. We were stepping over people, and you know you can feel when you're stepping over people.'" In David Ray Griffin's book, The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7, Why the Final Official Report About 9/11 is Unscientific and False, he says, although only 53 years old, Barry Jennings reportedly died after several days in a hospital on August 19, 2008. This was just 2 days before NIST had its August 21 press briefing to announce the draft version of its final report on World Trade Center 7. In April of 2009, Dylan Avery, who was one of the producers of the Loose Change movies, hired a private investigator reported to be one of the best in the state of New York to find out what she could. Within 24 hours, however, Avery received a message from her saying, "Due to some of the information I have uncovered, I have determined that this is a job for the police. I have refunded your credit card. Please do not contact me again about this individual." The collapse of Building 7 was also announced on CNN and the BBC before it happened. And there were multiple reports of a countdown happening right before Building 7 collapsed. And people also reported that the authorities were telling them to leave the area, that the building was coming down. And then we have World Trade Center Building 7 owner Larry Silverstein. During a PBS program in 2002, while discussing events leading up to the collapse of World Trade Center 7, Silverstein said, quote, "I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. And I said, we've had such a terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and we watched the building collapse." If you want more information on the collapse of the World Trade Center towers and World Trade Center Building 7, a really great website, as probably most of you know, is architectsandengineersfor911truth.org. They have extensive research and videos of the collapses there. And then a really excellent source, as already mentioned, for World Trade Center Building 7 is David Ray Griffin's book, The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7, Why the Final Official Report About 9/11 is Unscientific and False. Larry Silverstein leased the World Trade Center complex from the Port Authority 6 weeks before 9/11 and insured it for terrorist attacks. In fact, he doubled the insurance premium amount and then tried to get the courts to consider each World Trade Center collapse as two separate attacks and collect double again. The buildings were valued at $3.55 billion, and the courts capped his insurance payout at $4.55 billion. So Larry made out quite well. Silverstein Properties built World Trade Center 7 in the 80s and received another hefty insurance payout for that. That was over $800 million. The New York City High-Rise Safety Ballot Initiative, if successful, would force an investigation by the City of New York into the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, which, by the way, was not mentioned at all in the 9/11 Commission report. The latest news on the ballot initiative is that the city has acknowledged that the High-Rise Safety Initiative has collected enough signatures to qualify to be on the ballot in November. The High-Rise Safety Initiative folks are now preparing for a legal battle with the city over the content of the initiative. For more information on that, you can go to the website nyccan.org. Since we've been talking about World Trade Center Building 7, this seems like a good time to play a song by some local musicians, Carl Seeger Henry, Mark Saunders, and Gary Fox, who collaborated on the song. It's called Building 7, The Smoking Gun. And here it is.
Building 7, The Smoking Gun. It tells the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth. It tells the truth. 9/11. Building 7, oh, 9/11, Building 7. At the World Trade Center, three buildings came down, hit by two planes, panic all around. But Building 7 had barely a scratch, not hit by plane, yet it still collapsed, and office fires were blamed for that. Building 7, The Smoking Gun. It tells the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth. It tells the truth. 9/11, Building 7, oh, 9/11, Building 7. The first responders saw molten steel. They heard explosions, swore they were real. And we all watched a scene surreal. Those buildings fell with roaring blast, a demolition controlled and fast. Building 7, The Smoking Gun. It tells the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth. true. 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. We want the truth. What's the real cause? So many questions, it gives one pause. The official story, so full of flaws. Our leaders command us to just move on. We're here to tell you we won't move on. We're here to tell you we won't move on. We're here to tell you we won't move on. 'Cause Building 7's the smoking gun. We see the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth. It tells the truth. 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. 9/11, Building 7.
Now let's turn to the Pentagon. Honey Hanger, the alleged pilot of Flight 77, is reported to have been a really lousy pilot. Many experienced pilots say that they would not be able to make that turn that he made to come into the Pentagon where he supposedly did. On September 10, 2001, Donald Rumsfeld announced that $2.3 trillion was missing from the Pentagon. The department that was investigating the missing funds was located right where the plane allegedly hit, and all but one of the employees was killed. And of course, the records were also destroyed. 9/11 researcher Barbara Honecker has shown that explosives were also present at the Pentagon, and that they were present in the inner rings of the Pentagon and not just in the outer rings where the plane supposedly hit. Barbara Honecker has created a great video of her research on the Pentagon, and it's available on YouTube. It's called Behind the Smoke Curtain. April Gallup was working in the Pentagon on 9/11. It was her first day back from maternity leave, and on her way to daycare with her infant son, she was called back to the Pentagon immediately. As she turned on her computer, she reports explosions going off. She walked out of the hold of the Pentagon and reported seeing no airplane parts, no bodies, no luggage. Her treatment by the authorities is really frightening. To learn more about that, you can go to radioforall.net, where my shows are archived, and listen to the two-part interview with her. And again, that's radioforall.net, and it's the digit 4. She has lost several lawsuits against the government. In one case, one of the judges was Bush's cousin. I think it's important to ask ourselves, how does it make any sense that a commercial plane could violate the most sensitive and surveilled airspace, probably in the world, without being intercepted or shot down? Then there's the actions of Dick Cheney in the bunker, who had full prior knowledge that a plane was headed towards Washington. Transportation Secretary Norman Mineta testified to the 9/11 Commission that an aide kept updating Cheney that the plane was 50 miles out, 40 miles out, 30 miles out, etc. And when the aide asked Cheney, "Does the order still stand?" Cheney whipped his head around and said, "Of course it does. Have you heard anything to the contrary?" Presumably, he's referring to a stand-down order. Norman Mineta's testimony was not included in the 9/11 Commission report, and the video has been taken down from the website. But I think you can still view it on YouTube. Flight 93, that allegedly crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, looks like it was actually shot down because the debris field covered an 8-mile radius. There are multiple eyewitness reports of something looking like a missile or another plane in the sky, and sounds of explosions. The coroner at the alleged site of the crash stated that he didn't see anything there, that there was nothing at the site, no bodies, etc. I mentioned earlier the questions surrounding Todd Beamer's phone calls from Flight 93. Now, there are other anomalies with the calls from the airplanes. Solicitor General Ted Olson reportedly received a call from his wife, Barbara Olson, from Flight 77 that hit the Pentagon, and she was supposedly the one who gave out the information about the Middle Eastern men with box cutters. In the Moussaoui trial, the FBI reported that her calls lasted 0 seconds. So again, lots of questions there. So we've been in this endless war on terror against, quote, Muslim extremists for 13 years now. And it's well documented that Al-Qaeda was created by the CIA in the 1980s to fight the Russians in Afghanistan. This is what Webster Tarpley has to say about terrorism in his book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in USA. He says, I reject the naive or sociological explanation of terrorism, the assumption that misery, oppression, and desperation give rise to terrorist organizations which spontaneously express these underlying moods. But we live in an era in which political and social reality are incessantly manipulated by huge and pervasive intelligence agencies, CIA, FBI, MI6, FSB, Mossad, BND, and the like, whose cumulative effect is to overdetermine or subdetermine observed reality. I therefore contend that the more reliable conceptual model for understanding terrorism is one that situates the secret intelligence agency or factions thereof in the center of the process, recruiting prospective terrorists from the immiserated masses and forming them into clandestine organizations which are henceforth subject to guidance from outside, behind, and above. High-profile international terrorism is not spontaneous. It is artificial and synthetic. It requires expert terrorist controllers. Because of this, the starting point for realistic appraisal of 9/11 is not primarily the sociology of the Middle East, but rather the sociological record of NATO and CIA state-sponsored terrorism in Western Europe and elsewhere in the post-World War II period. Synthetic terrorism is a strategy used by oligarchs for the purpose of waging war on the people, particularly the middle class. And he goes on to reference Operation Gladio, which I would encourage you to look up if you don't know what that is. It talks about the state-sponsored terrorism in the 60s and 70s in Europe. Finally today, I'd like to talk a little bit about a recent visit I made to the new 9/11 Museum located at Ground Zero. My initial impression was that there was a lot of wasted space with not much in it, until you get to the room called the Day of 9/11. They allowed photos in the other areas, but not in this room, which is where the real issues can be found. I thought the displays were very, very simplistic and designed to play on one's emotions. And I know this is an emotional issue anyway, but I felt that the design played into that. I felt very angry walking through this room because it was just totally the official conspiracy theory propaganda being put forth. I wasn't expecting anything different, but actually being there was disturbing. The collapse of Building 7 wasn't dealt with at all. Just like the 9/11 Commission report omitted it, so did the museum. The flight that allegedly hit the Pentagon had a massive curve to it as it came into the Pentagon. The diagram of the flight path in the museum makes it look like it was a straight line. This room was designed so that you go through all of the highly emotional government story and you see photos of all of the destruction and people jumping out windows, and then you reach the section on the alleged hijackers. So you're all worked up, and then you get there, and now you can really hate these people. Now, we know that at least 7 of them are still alive, and yet there they were on the wall in the 9/11 museum. It's mind-boggling, and yet they get away with this total fabrication of what happened. They even have a little section in this room addressing conspiracy theories and cite the infamous Popular Mechanics book that supposedly debunks the, quote, conspiracy theories. They make no mention of the 2,250 architects and engineers who are backed up by the scientific evidence. This section was so simplistic and yet so outrageous that I wanted to laugh and cry at the same time. There were lots of other discrepancies with the truth in the museum, but these are the ones that come to mind right now. So the 9/11 Museum is in step with American mainstream media in that it seems like an attempt at dumbing down anyone who passes through it. The museum is free on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. on. Otherwise, it costs $24. So if you happen to get down to see the museum, I'd welcome hearing your reactions to it. And now I want to remind you that the Connecticut 9/11 Truth Group is showing the new film, The Anatomy of a Great Deception, by David Hooper. It's the story of his discovery of 9/11 starting in 2011 and his efforts to try and convince his family and friends. It's going to be shown at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium in Hillier Hall on the campus of the University of Hartford. So bring your family and friends out to see this new 9/11 film and join our post-film discussion. Parking is available in Lot B. And I'm going to conclude the show today with this song by Martin Noakes.
There's a million reasons why I don't believe it. There's a million reasons why it can't be true. Open fire, can't melt steel. It's not hot enough. It's nothing new, it's not a mystery. Check out the Reichstag, Germany. There's a million questions still. Like the towers, it just fell. The fire's not enough, no way hot enough to bring it down. The project for the new American century was added to a year before that day. It states in order to proceed, a modern day Pearl Harbor. Set them free. The project for the new American century. Give a star.